Watch tomorrow. Be the change. Be the change we wish to see. Yes. Welcome, welcome, and good morning. Yes, that's what I like to hear. And blessings and good morning to you who are joining us through the ethers. One of the things I love about the ethers is that it still connects us to one another. So I welcome you and thank you for tuning in to our service this morning. As I was sitting here, I was just looking out. I just love to see your faces when I look out. And I love that there's some choir members here, and it's not a choir Sunday, so that does my heart really good, just to see people who I love. I haven't seen in a while, but I love to have your face in the place, your spirit in the place. There's something about our gathering together in sharing a consciousness, sharing an energy, sharing a vibe with one another. And so I thank you for being here this morning. I really do. You know, there's a part of me that says, oh, this is the time that I should probably just, you know, spend my time on an island someplace, just enjoying myself in the sun. And while I plan to do some of that, my soul is still called to join you in community and to be able to offer, you know, a word to keep us encouraged, to keep us inspired. You know, my doctor was like, well, you know, you should use this time to just go and and enjoy. And I said, I am enjoying. Because I'm on purpose. I'm doing what I feel I've been called to do. And so therefore it brings a sense of connection, community, and purpose to my life. And that's important to me at this time of my life and in my life. So thank you for allowing me to be here and to just be a vessel and channel to bring forth a message. You know, I never know what God is going to give me as a message. And sometimes I'm waiting, but he never fails. I always manage to glean something to come through this morning. But I wanted us to start off with our prayer for unity of Washington, D.C., because I'm about community. I'm feeling, you know, the power of the collective, that we are coming together. We're going to need each other. So it's good for us to learn to be in community and to support each other. And so let's affirm our prayer for unity of Washington, D.C. at the beginning. Okay, together. Unity of Washington, D.C., is a prosperous and dynamic center of love, peace, joy, and truth. We are mighty to attract an abundance of good and to radiate that good to others. All of our needs are met in full and on time, with enough to share and to spare. We are overflowing with positive, prayerful, and loving people committed to the principles of truth. We all serve for the glory of God, and so it is. Amen. Amen. Thank you so much. There's so much power in those words, and we've been decreeing that for a very, very long time. And the Spirit is saying we need to keep affirming that and making sure that we're putting out, that vibration, that energy, so that we are calling in those people who are seeking the light. As light bearers, we're putting out that light and we are calling in those who are seeking the light. There's a scripture that said that those who walk in darkness have seen a great light. So we are the ones. I loved your song that said, be the change, because we are the ones that are shining our light. I heard a quote the other day that I really, really enjoyed. And I think it's especially powerful because I think it's pointing to the times in which we are living and whatever is happening in this world today. And the quote said, we are not here to become spiritual. We are here to become conscious. We are here to become conscious, not to become spiritual. We've all heard the saying that we are spiritual beings living in a spiritual universe governed by spiritual laws and principles. That is true. But we are not here to become spiritual because we already are what? Spiritually. What we need to do is to awaken, to become conscious of the truth of who we really are. That's why we're here, to awaken to the truth of our being, not to become something we already are, but to awaken to that awareness, that knowledge, and then to live and to share and to express from that knowing, from that place. And I believe that we, as a people on the planet, are in the throes of waking up. And there are a whole lot of people in this country in particular who are having a rude awakening right about now. They are having a rude awakening, right? Their eyes are being opened and their long-held beliefs and perspectives are being jimmied loose and shaken loose. Because some thought that they were a part of the in-group and that, you know, what was going to take place was not going to affect them, but it was going to happen to other people. And so they thought they were sitting good and sitting pretty and a part of, you know, part of being in the know, only to find out, no, you ain't in that group either. You are just in the same boat as the rest of us. And it's a rude awakening, right? And so, but it's also a powerful time because I firmly believe that when we become spiritually conscious, that the majority of the world's ills will be minimized or eliminated completely because when we spiritually awaken, when we become spiritually conscious, right, that all of our sense of separation or being apart from each other because we either look different or live in different parts of the world or speak different languages or have different cultures, that we seem to focus on our separateness. But when we become spiritually awakened, we are awakened into the notion of our oneness. We automatically begin to see our interconnectedness, not only our interconnectedness with each other, but with all life itself. And when we begin to awaken spiritually, I think we will naturally, there's a natural inclination to take care of one another and the planet. When you are spiritually awakened, you will have to take care of each other. It's a natural leading of your spirit to do that. And that means that compassion, collaboration, when we are spiritually awakened, that will be the rule of the day. I also believe that it is the unconsciousness of some people that is actually serving to awaken other people. Now, I want you to follow me with this, that the unconsciousness of some people is actually the vehicle to help awaken others. It is man's inhumanity to man that is causing the expression of humanity to come about, right? Because when we begin to see, oh my gosh, many of us were not tuned in, and I'll pick Gaza, but there's many other countries that I could tune into, especially countries in Africa that are undergoing great, great starvation. Millions are starving. We don't hear about it, so it's not on our radar, but it is happening. But let's take the recent one that was on our radar. It was when we got to see the little children that they would show in Gaza who had just been, you know, their village was bombed and they lost their parents. And there was one I remember of a little boy, and he was in the hospital and he was so frightened. He was by himself and he was so frightened. His little body was just shaking and his eyes were big as saucers, you know. And I watched, they filmed a doctor coming over and just comforting him, putting his arm in the little, it just broke my heart because he was just there as an innocent being, traumatized because some adults are quarreling and fighting over who has rights to be in a particular place. And meanwhile, this young soul was was misplaced. And we saw images and images after that, and it awakened our humanity, did it not? Across the globe, people were like, wait a minute, this is not right. Hold on. Now, things like this had been happening all along, but it wasn't in our front yard. We didn't get to see it. It was like even in the time of the Vietnam War. We knew that there was a war going on, but it wasn't until all of a sudden the cameras went and started relaying the pictures back to us as to what was happening. And I don't remember if you remember the picture of the little girl who was naked, and there was a napalm bomb that had exploded, and she had no clothes, and she was just running through the street. That picture, I can see her now. It's when we saw that picture, when we saw that inhumanity, we said, wait a minute, maybe this war is not a good thing. So there's an awakening that happens when we can see one another's humanity, when we can see the actions of our inhumanity and what it produces and what it does to another living being, that we begin to wake up to that. And so what I'm thinking is, what appears to be a lot of destruction and what appears to be things breaking down is actually probably serving as a catalyst for waking up. It's the catalyst for our waking up, that there's something new that must come about, something higher that must come about. And so a lot of people in this country are having a rude awakening. But that's okay. They are waking up. So I say, don't be discouraged. Yes, there's going to be a continuation of a little bit more suffering and a little bit hardship, but that is serving a higher purpose. So we need to be encouraged that this craziness that we see, because it is crazy, it's crazy energy, it's crazy thinking, this craziness somehow is still serving a higher purpose. Because we are becoming more what? Conscious. And our role is not just to be spiritual beings, but to be conscious that we are spiritual beings. And so what's happening is waking a lot of people up at this time. And this awakening is happening by and through the unconscious acts of those who are still asleep. So it feels like it's a paradox almost, right? We're waking up because of the actions of the unconscious. So things like of the lower vibrations of the human condition and on the human spectrum of life, this lower vibrations has these people in their grasp so that they are rendering them unconscious. It's the lower vibrations, the lower qualities of being. Things like greed, power, supremacy, fear, separation, domination, discrimination, injustice, and the like, that are having people, some people, rendered unconscious, as opposed to having awakened values like abundance and sufficiency. So they've turned abundance into greed, but this is abundance and sufficiency, meaning that there is enough. There's enough for everybody to live healthy, happy, whole lives. There is enough substance. There is enough abundance for everybody. But yet, because they are asleep, they want to feel, oh, greed. I must take it all. I must have it all. As opposed to an awakened value of, there's enough. There's no need for me to fear everything that I need. We just had that prayer that we spoke, right? That said that there's enough to spare and to share. And there is. Because God's source of good is inexhaustible. And when we awaken spiritually, we know how to access that good. We know how to receive that good, to receive the blessings, and to what? Radiate that good to others, to keep it going, to keep the flow going. And so we have these awakened values like abundance and sufficiency, connectedness, compassion, love, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because those are qualities that bring us all together, right? Now, I was thinking, I don't know about you, but I just am amazed at the people who are asleep have an aversion to actually being awake. They have an aversion to being awake. And they have now deemed, right, being woke as a negative thing. Being aware of other people's plights or others' suffering is somehow seen as a negative thing. Somehow it's considered bad to be concerned about another's suffering, another's needs. There was one politician, I just found it amazing, I won't mention her name, but she said, just with all pride in her, one thing is guaranteed, that I will never be awoke. I will never be woke. And I thought, well, now that's a telling thing. You are telling on yourself right now, Don Tootin, you're not going to ever be woke. But that was like a badge of pride. And I'm like, something is amiss, Lord. Something is amiss. But then I have to remember, but wait. This unconscious behavior is waking everybody up. It is waking us up. And so I decided I wanted to look up things like spiritual awakening and what it means to be woke. And this is what it says in ChatGPT on spiritual awakening. It says, spiritual awakening is a transformative process in which an individual experiences a heightened sense of consciousness or awareness. See, to be woke is to be aware, to be awake, right? So it is spiritual awareness is a transformative process in which an individual experiences a heightened sense of consciousness or awareness regarding their inner self and the nature of reality. This awakening often involves a deepening understanding of one's purpose, connection to the universe, and the interconnectedness of all beings. So when you begin to awake, you're not only going to awaken to your own sense of purpose, your own sense of being, but you will also awaken to the vastness of the universe of which you are a part. And you will begin to awaken to the interconnectedness of all beings. We will see that there's only one life. It's the life of God, the life energy of God that flows through everything and everyone. And we begin to see that when we spiritually awaken. And for the term woke, this is what ChatGPT says about that term. It says the term woke originally emerged from African-American vernacular English. And I think it was first introduced in 1930-something. To be woke. And so the woke, it originally emerged from African-American vernacular, meaning to be awake or aware, particularly in relation to social injustices and systemic inequalities. In modern usage, it refers to a heightened awareness of social issues such as racism, sexism, LGBTQ rights, and other forms of discrimination. Being woke implies an active engagement in advocating for social change and being conscious of the biases and injustice that present themselves in society. However, the term has also been criticized and politicized, sometimes being used pejoratively to describe what some see as excessive political correctness or social activism. It's like to be politically correct is a bad thing. You know, to be socially active is a bad thing. It's just so interesting how the essence and the idea of those words, spiritual awakening and to be woke, is somehow flipped around and to mean something completely different, which it doesn't. But I began to think about this and I said, well, if I look at both of these definitions, to be spiritually awakened and to be woke, that I would have to come to the conclusion that Jesus was woke. I have to say that Jesus was woke, right? And we certainly know that he was spiritually awakened, that his consciousness went a shift, but he was woke. He wasn't afraid to get into some good trouble. And that he firmly stood on the side of what was right and just, not just for his group of people, but for all people. He stood on the side of what was right and just, literally and spiritually. He would say, you know, okay, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Okay, give the world. Okay, we got to pay we got to pay taxes. Okay, do that. But he also understood what is right and just spiritually, and to stand on that as well. And so I wanted to look at some of his actions that he took. We always often look at his teachings, right? We study the teachings of Jesus. But sometimes actions speak louder than what? Words. So I thought, let me look at some of the actions that he did. And I'll start with one on the Sabbath. Now, the Sabbath was considered a holy activity. It was a holy day, right? And during that time, you were not supposed to do any kind of work on the Sabbath. You were to just keep it holy and stuff. But Jesus would often heal people on the Sabbath, which really got into the rancor of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. How dare you heal on the Sabbath? As if it's okay, let people suffer, let them die, but don't do it on the Sabbath day. It's similar to some of the laws that are being made. We're going to try to preserve the right of an unborn child, but we're going to let the mother die. Right? And so Jesus would often break that rule that was considered, a great sin against the people. And he would actually encourage acts of mercy, which would clash with all these strict interpretations of the laws of the Sabbath. And he would say to them, look, well, it's the Sabbath day, but I tell you what, which one of you, if you lost your sheep on the Sabbath, would not go around trying to find your sheep? And they'd have to say, yeah, well, we could. Yes, you would. So doing what's right, not what you have created as the rules of life. And so his whole philosophy sometimes was stepping beyond the rules. If it meant breaking the rules, that rules that were restricting people, restricting humanity, restricting compassion, he was like, break them. Break them. That's not considered, the right thing to have these rules. He said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's for us to use. Yes, it's a time of respite and seeking spiritual, wholeness. But if there's something arises where you're going to put your spirituality into action on the Sabbath, then do it. It's okay. Not holding to, these inflexible rules and having this rigid focus on just something that's not working and not right. And I said that Jesus wasn't afraid to break some rules if the rules were breaking people. That's good trouble. You got to break the rules if the rules are breaking people. So he would do that. And here's another one. We all know the statement that says you are known by the company you keep, right? You're known by the company you keep. Well, aside from hanging out with the disciples, Jesus was also known to interact with some interesting people. He often interacted with tax collectors. And maybe like now, I don't know about now, but back then, tax collectors, they didn't have a good reputation. Even though they would collect the taxes for Caesar, they would also put a burden on the people by collecting something for themselves on the side. So people didn't like the tax collectors then, and they pretty much don't like them too much now. But he would hang out with the tax collectors, or he would welcome them into his midst. The sinners, the marginalized people, right? He would welcome them into his tent, into his presence. He would often acknowledge and accept women when it wasn't the conventional thing to do at that time. Women were not considered as people, but they were chattel and property. They didn't really have much rights, right? So, you know, when I hear some of these folks today wanting to get back to, not taking it back to when America was built, they want to go back to, you know, ancient days where women had no rights and had no acknowledgement as being people or whatever. But Jesus was different. If you understand, he always acknowledged women. Now, I was thinking of the woman at the well. I don't know if you remember the story about the woman at the well. She was an outcast. She was an outcast, and she would come to the well around noontime, it says, to draw water. Now, most of the women would go early in the morning when the sun was not hot and out so much. So they would come and they would gather, but she would go by herself at noontime, right? So she was an outcast to draw her water. Plus, she was a Samaritan woman. Now, the Jews did not speak with Samaritans. They were like, y'all ain't our people. You know, you're not like us, so we're not having anything to do with you, right? And so they didn't speak to Samaritan women or men. So along comes Jesus. It's noontime, and Jesus is at the well, and he's hot, and he's tired, and he's thirsty. So he asks the woman if she would give him a drink, because apparently maybe he didn't have anything to draw the water from, and she had come prepared. And he asked her for a drink, and it says in the scripture that she was totally surprised and taken aback because, one, he was a man speaking to her as a woman, and two, he was a Jew who was actually addressing her. And so she was like, whoa, right? Now, of course, she gives him the water, and he says to her that he would give her living water. He would give her living water, said if she drank from those waters, she would never thirst again. And so she's like, well, sir, okay. Yeah, I want that. Give me those waters. And so, of course, they transact, and he has the water, and she begins to drink. But what was amazing was he begins to share with her and tell her about her history of having had five husbands. Now, that's a lot for even this day. But back in ancient days, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of marriage and divorce and hanging out. That wasn't happening. But this woman had five husbands, which is probably why she was an outcast, because she didn't fit into the norm, the customs of that time. And he begins to tell her that. But the interesting thing is he doesn't judge her. He doesn't shame her. He doesn't say, therefore, you should be an outcast, right? He gives her living waters of truth. He blesses her. He inspires her soul into awakening because it says she was so excited she ran back to tell everybody. There was something in her that he touched and he awakened in her. Her sense of value, her sense of still goodness, regardless of her history, regardless of her past. See, and we all got history. Everybody here has history. I bet you if I sit down and talk to you, I can find something that you probably are not too thrilled about having done in your life. But he welcomes her, and he stirs up something in her soul. And he loved revealing truth to women. There are many instances. He did it to the woman at the well. He broke what was called gender norms, right? This whole big issue of gender norms today, Jesus broke those by his interaction with women, by his affirming their value and worth as a part of the community, as a part of the family, as a part of, you know, the life that was happening at that time. And so he, not only him speaking to the woman at the well, but what about the woman who had the issue of blood for 12 years, right? And she secretly and boldly comes up to him. He's in a crowd. Now, the fact that this woman is out in the crowd, but with her issue of blood, is also against what was proper and right. But she comes into the crowd, and she's seeking him, and she secretly touches the hem of his garment. And when she does that, it says what? Virtual healing energy left his being, and he knew it instantly, and he said, who touched me? And, of course, he turns around, and she's there. but instead again of ridiculing her. Because if she had an issue, it's not customary for a woman who was bleeding to be in the company of men, to touch men. They were considered unclean. I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Red Tent, but anyway, but women were supposed to be cast aside at that time. And instead of ridiculing her and saying, you touched me and you're unclean and you have now made me and blah, 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 unclean, he just says, turns on and says, woman, thy faith has made thee well. Right? Again, breaking a gender norm and saying, nah, your faith, ooh, go ahead, girl. He said, you're going to come out in the middle of a crowd and you're going to touch me in the middle of that? You got some stuff with you. And I see it. I honor it. Yeah. You good. Go on, you well. Right? Breaking gender norms and customs. He didn't see anybody as unclean or unworthy. He would go into the leper colony and heal the lepers. They were an outcast. They were different. They were not accepted in society, but he would go and he would heal the lepers. He would forgive the woman caught in adultery and said, okay, let he who among you is without sin, you cast the first stone. And all of those men had to hang their heads and walk away. So he's again, yes, because think about it. You could be stoned to death if you were caught in adultery. He broke tradition and said, no. Everybody has sinned. And he used her as an example. He went and he ministered to the poor. We've got people trying to propose laws to make the poor criminals, to actually criminalize poverty. When I say this is some craziness, this is some craziness, right? But he welcomed the poor, the hungry, the outcasts. These were his people. His people, and everybody, for him, everybody belonged. Everybody was welcome. Jews and the Gentiles. Everybody was welcome. He would question the religious authority of the day, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who would make things difficult for people, who weren't trying. They were supposed to be the high priests. They were supposed to be the one taking care of the people and helping the people, yet they burdened the people with these unjust laws and rules and regulations that the people could hardly live, right? But he would challenge them. He would challenge them because he was unafraid of breaking the rules, of calling out injustice, interpreting, you know, laws that were not really based on compassion, but on ritual and formality, but not on humanity and not on compassion. He would always teach about the dangers of just loving wealth and materialism, just to be loving wealth and materialism over spiritual riches, right? And so when he came into the temple at the beginning and he saw all the money changers and the people selling, you know, doves and all kinds of things in his father's house in the temple, he comes in there and he says, what? He takes out a whip. I love this about it. He takes out a whip. That was Indiana Jones stuff. He took out a whip and he turned over the tables. Right? He's turning over the tables, and he said, and this is my father's house. This is a house of prayer. He wasn't afraid to do that, which was like, whoa, who is this person coming in and doing these things, right? He was definitely willing to get into some good trouble. Jesus was woke, and he was supportive. Guess what? He was supportive of diversity, equity, and inclusion. He was supportive. And so I wanted to share some ideas, some thoughts on, because I think these are spiritual qualities. Diversity, equity, and inclusion are spiritual qualities. And one of the things that I heard, and I love this so much, is that, you know, stop. Whenever we're speaking of this, we don't need to say DEI. Say it out loud as to what it is. It is diversity, it is equity, and it is inclusion. Because when you say DEI, that's been hijacked. That phrasing of that has now become equated with, in some people's mind, as unqualified people, unworthy people, maybe even people, culturally black people or Hispanic people or brown people, but it's not the real people, so that's DEI. Well, no. It is diversity, it is equity, and it is inclusion. And so when people hear those words, it takes on a completely different manner. Because if I could say to somebody, tell me why you are against diversity. Tell me why you are against equity. Tell me why you are against inclusion. When I pose that, they have to go, oh, but if you say DEI, well, DEI is just something that's just unqualified people. No. So say the words out. Because this is the thing. Life is diverse. Life itself is what? It is diverse. There are many people, many cultures, everything is different. Lots of flowers, lots of nations. Life itself is diverse. It's a part of the spiritual energy of the sense of oneness and wholeness. The connectedness between the sum of the parts is greater than what? The whole. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts, I should say, right? That when you put all the parts together, you get the whole. You get the whole world, the wholeness of life. And that includes everybody in it. That adds to the value of the whole, of life itself. And one part is not more better. One part is not more better than the other. You know, the scripture says, like, that'd be something like the toe arguing with the head and heart, and the heart is, I'm better than the head. No, I'm better than the finger. And every part of us equals the whole body. And it all serves a purpose. I don't know what the spleen does, but I know I got one, so it must be a part of something. Right? So this arguing about which part of the whole is the better part, it all is needed. It is all a part. And so I said, well, let me look up what GP says I looked up equity, and I know what diversity is. And this is about equity. It says equity refers, because I think this is important, we understand what equity is. We know what diversity is. Equity refers to the principle of fairness and justice in the distribution of resources, opportunities, and treatment among individuals and groups. So it refers to, right, the principle of fairness and justice. The Bible says we should walk, right, humbly and towards justice. We should always seek divine justice and fairness. So it's the principle of fairness and justice in the distribution of resources, opportunities, and treatment among individuals and groups. It recognizes that people have different needs, circumstances, and starting points, and aims to provide everyone with what they need to achieve an equal outcome, rather than treating everyone the same. Now, I want you to hear what this is saying. Sometimes we equate equality and equity as the same. And there's a difference, because equity says, let's try to give everybody what they need at the level of where they are and their circumstances so that they can have an equal outcome. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to give you all the same. You're not going to get the same as me because my needs are different than yours. Right? So equity is having the fairness and the justice. If we have a building and it says that everybody is welcome to come into the building, but I don't have a ramp out there for a differently abled person, then that person does not have equity. They don't have the opportunity to come into the building to receive an equal outcome. Right? So we make a ramp so that that process then brings equity. They have then equal access. to everything. They can experience an equal outcome, but what they get might be different. You know, so somebody may need, you know, let's just say we have a fairy tale situation and we'll just say like, okay, it takes $10,000 to live a good life. I'm just making a number up. And somebody has $20,000. So they already have a good life. And somebody else only has $5,000. That person, if the goal to be equitable is that everybody has $10,000, that means this person who has $20,000 might not need to receive anything, but this person might need to receive what? How much? I said they had five. Okay, we get into ten. They need $5,000. You can play with the numbers. You get the point, though, right? So the point is that for people, don't get your minds blown to think that because you're trying to have an equitable life experience for people, that you're trying to bring fairness, you're trying to bring those people who don't have access to an equal outcome, that they be given something to make them whole, to bring them up into alignment, that you are somehow being cheated. No, you have what is needed. You're not being cheated. Nothing is being taken from you. Equity is not the same as equality. Equal, yes, but we want an equal outcome. And how we get there, what I need to be whole might be different than what you need to be whole. But let's see if we can make everybody whole. Let's give everybody access. Make it a level playing field for everybody. That's equity. And so what is wrong with that? Because if you have to admit, well, no, I don't want everybody to be equal. I don't want everybody to have a good way of life. I just want to have it. See, to admit that, it shows your character. And so they don't want to admit that. They come up with something else. Well, it means that you're unqualified. No, it doesn't. It means we're trying to make an even playing field, right? So that an equal outcome is the same rather than treating everyone the same. Now, that's not the same as equal treatment under the law. That's a whole nother thing. Meaning of equity, fairness. Equity is about ensuring that everyone has access to the same opportunities and resources tailored to their specific situations. That's what affirmative action was about. It wasn't about giving special treatment. It was about equity. Making sure that those who have historically been denied the education or an opportunity for an education to have one, an opportunity for a good job to have one. It wasn't taking anything away or making these people special. It was making things equitable. Equitable, right? And justice is to seek and to address historical and systemic inequalities that have disadvantaged certain groups, promoting social justice. Inclusion. Equity emphasizes the importance of including diverse voices and perspectives, making sure all individuals feel valued and respected. The sum of the parts is important, but it equals a greater whole. When we come together, one person's consciousness is great, but when you start adding all these consciousness, it becomes a greater force, greater than one individual. And so this is what we are seeking to do and to be about. This is what we're trying to wake up to, and it's time for us to wake up. And we see all this inequality, we see all of this sense of injustices, or what I call a perverse way of seeing things. I don't know if some of you were on looking at the news and watching how a world leader who had come to talk and to compromise was treated like someone who was, you know, I was just sitting there going, what happened to our values, our sense of decorum, decency, diplomacy, acknowledgement, respect? It's all out the window. And so I have to keep reminding myself that the unconscious actions of and behaviors of others is serving to wake up many, many people. Yeah. And so that notion keeps me grounded. When I feel like I want to go, Lord, have mercy, I recognize, ooh, a greater purpose is happening. It's okay. Somehow or another, this soul has decided that it was going to come to help awaken humanity. I'm going to put it at that, because on the larger scheme of things, that is what is happening, right? So we have to remember to keep going to the spiritual, take it higher, take it higher, take it higher. And at the same time, work with that lower vibration, heal that lower vibration, deal with what we have to deal with, do what is ours to do when we have to do it, however you need to do it. If you want to march, however is yours to participate, but to wake up and to add your part to the whole. Do with what you have, with where you are. Put that into action, because that's what's called for at this time, and it's okay. So, you know, if Jesus was woke, I don't mind being woke. I don't mind being woke. He said we ought to love our neighbors as ourselves. God first, right? But to love our neighbors as ourselves, and everybody is our neighbor. And in that instance, I was thinking about, you know, we are the seat in the heart of government, and there are a lot of people, a lot of federal workers who may have lost their jobs and that may be in our community right here in this church. And I began to think about that and, you know, how we can support each other. And so I was moved to talk to the board, and I said, I want to create a Love Thy Neighbor Fund. And this is where we, as a congregation, if we have something extra, because I said, you know, we still have to take care of the lights and whatever, we still appreciate your gifts and your tithes that go for the work of this ministry. But if you have something extra that you might want to share, you can share it in and put something into the Love Thy Neighbor Fund, which will help to support if someone comes from our institution that, you know, maybe they lost their job and they don't know what to do, they need some food, they need some whatever, that we can love our neighbor as ourselves. So you can add to this. We put it on our online giving apps. It's on the website at any time, and you just check off Love Thy Neighbor Fund. So we have a building fund. We have this kind of fund. Let's have a Love Thy Neighbor Fund. And whenever you think about it and you have some extra that you would like to share and to spare, put it in the Love Thy Neighbor Fund, and we'll be able to take care of each other should there be a need. And someone was like, well, are we going to do it for everybody? I said, well, we can, but I want to start home at home. You know, if that's the need, let's start it at home. So the deal, friends, is that we have to stay woke. We have to stay woke. We have to keep active. Where it says keep calm and carry on, I say keep calm, active, and carry on. Right? So I just say blessings to you, much love, much appreciation. Wake up, everybody. I hear Marvin Gaye. He just jumped in there. Wake up, everybody. So it's our time. Blessings. The blessings. Blessings. Thank you. Thank you.